Joel Skousen's World Affairs Brief, October 6, 2017, Commentary and Insights on a Troubled World. This week's analysis, Las Vegas Mass Shooting, Detailed Analysis. Trump says Tillerson, quote, wasting time, end quote, with North Korea. News shorts, Marseille's terrorist had 7 identities. Brexit in turmoil. Secret spy towers in New York put in place by MTA. Trump talks debt forgiveness for Puerto Rico. Preparedness tip, putting the garden to bed. Item 1. Las Vegas mass shooting. Detailed analysis. All of the modern high-profile mass shootings of innocent people at schools, movie theaters, or concerts have been engineered by government black operations, either using controlled terrorists, mercenaries, or unstable youths under the influence of mood-altering drugs and hypnosis. Even the most hardened criminals don't use automatic weapons to shoot hundreds of people. When I first saw the profile of Stephen Paddock, the claimed shooter already dead in the 32nd floor Mandalay Bay suite, surrounded by dozens of weapons and spent shell casings, I suspected this was a patsy in a setup. According to his brother, Stephen was just a normal guy with a few guns and no religious or political fervor at all. But as the evidence poured in and the guns were traced to his recent purchases, it seems evident that Paddock was involved, though he couldn't have been the only shooter. Multiple witnesses and video showed the telltale flashing signature of an automatic weapon coming from the mid to lower half of the Mandalay Bay Tower. Another video surfaced of a security guard opening up on the crowd down at ground level around Gate 7. And then there was the Hispanic woman with obvious advance warning, who warned or taunted a woman in line prior to the venue that, "You're all going to die." This week, I'll walk you through all the evidence so far, including crucial weapons analysis. The principal shooter or shooters were firing from a distance of over 1,100 feet away, but because of the closely packed, dense crowd in the parking lot venue, a high percentage of the bullets hit home. 59 were killed and over 500 wounded in a 9-minute shooting spree. The main suspect, Stephen Paddock, had no previous criminal record. Background on Stephen Paddock. The 64-year-old Stephen Paddock began his career as an accountant who became a multimillionaire earning his money through property investments. He was now living the free and easy life with no family, 2 airplanes, and a home in Reno and Mesquite, Nevada. He was addicted to gambling and was known in Vegas as a high-stakes gambler who bet large sums of money, sometimes winning and more often losing. He's the big-type casinos cater to by offering free luxury suites, drinks, and other perks while gambling. Paddock's room was complimentary. He was not married but had a live-in girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, 62, which he recently sent back to her native Philippines with a gift of $100,000, which she took as a breaking-it-off gift. She flew back to the U.S. to be interviewed by the FBI, but doesn't appear to have suspected he was planning anything horrific like the shooting. Several outlets, including Infowars.com, tried to insinuate that she had a relationship with Middle East terror because she was pictured at a beach in Dubai. No evidence has surfaced about any terror contacts, and Dubai is not known to be a hub of terror recruitment. It could have been a mere vacation jaunt with her rich boyfriend. The Washington Post dug further into their relationship, saying, quote, Paddock met Mary Lou Danley several years ago while she was working as a high-limit hostess for Club Paradise of the Atlantis Casino Resort Spa in Reno, Nevada, said his brother, Eric Paddock. Employees at a Starbucks in Mesquite, Nevada, however, described the couple's relationship differently. A supervisor at the coffee shop told the Los Angeles Times that Paddock often berated Danley in public. The Starbucks is the only one in the town of Mesquite, and it is inside the Virgin River Casino. It happened a lot, Esperanza Mendoza, supervisor of the Starbucks, told the Times. He would verbally abuse her when Danley asked to use his casino card to buy food or other things inside the casino, Esperanza said. He would glare down at her and say, with a mean attitude, "You don't need my casino card for this. I'm paying for your drink, just like I'm paying for you." Then she would softly say, "Okay," and step back behind him. He was so rude to her in front of us. Danley is from the Philippines but has Australian citizenship. End of the quote. Eric Paddock and the rest of Stephen's family were in total shock at the news. His brother told CBS News, "It's like an asteroid just fell on top of our family." He could not understand what motivated his elder brother. Where the expletive did he get automatic weapons? He has no military background or anything like that. He's a guy who lived in a house in Mesquite, drove down and gambled in Las Vegas. He did stuff. Eat burritos. End quote. The younger Paddock repeatedly described his brother as, quote, just a guy, end quote, with no serious health or money problems. Quote, as far as we knew, he had enough money to live the rest of his life in comfort, end quote, he said. Paddock told CBS he was on the phone all morning with Las Vegas police trying to figure out what happened. Paddock's father was a convicted bank robber and was in prison during the time the mother tried to raise her four boys, as the Washington Post noted in the above article. Quote, relatives say the roots of Paddock's loner lifestyle may have been planted July 28, 1960. On that day, when Paddock was seven, a neighbor from across the street took him swimming. The neighbor at the time told a local newspaper that she knew authorities were coming for his father, a bank robber, and she wanted to spare the boy the trauma of seeing his father hauled away by authorities, end quote. Regarding the motive, only one source has claimed that Paddock was involved in the Antifa, anti-fascist and anti-Trump movement, and that is why he targeted a country music festival, assuming this was mostly a Republican gathering. As Newsweek wrote, quote, while police have yet to rule out a political motive in the horrific shooting in Las Vegas, the only ties between Paddock and Antifa so far appear to be coming from an anonymous source on Alex Jones's phone, end quote. Alex Jones claimed that someone called him who was connected to the FBI hostage rescue team involved in the breach of Paddock's room. He claims that the FBI shot Paddock and that he didn't commit suicide and that the room had Antifa literature all around. Quote, the Las Vegas shooter didn't commit suicide, as the mainstream media is reporting, but was killed by a FBI hostage rescue team who also found Antifa literature in his hotel room, according to a source linked to the team. The FBI team took the suspect out after he opened fire on them, according to the source, and afterwards the team found photos taken in the Middle East of a woman linked to the suspect, end quote. Personally, Joel says, I'm very suspicious that any FBI agent or associate would call Alex Jones. Notice that the story actually says, according to a source linked to the team. That's a pretty nebulous and even more suspicious. The NSA tracks all phone calls, and any real agent talking to Alex Jones would be found out and fired on the spot. I never trust anyone claiming to be an insider and talking to our side of the conspiracy movement, especially when anonymous with no way to check on their identity or story. They are always planting disinformation. Another claim shows a picture of an Antifa protester dressed in pink, who the voice says is Paddock. While the resemblance and build is generally similar, the beard is white without a mustache, and Paddock's mustache and beard are salt and pepper colored. It's just not convincing. And even if it were, there is a big gap between joining in a jovial protest and perpetrating the worst mass shooting in recent history based on extreme hate for country music people. Short of finding any connection to the dark side of government, I'm more inclined to feel his participation in this shooting is best explained not by a rational, methodical attack, but by the same kind of SSRI drug-induced satanic-influenced psychosis that got into James Holmes and Adam Lanza in their irrational shooting attacks on innocent people and children. The foregoing background on how Paddock treated people badly is important because it demonstrates that Paddock was basically a quote-unquote normal guy to his family, but had his dark side as well. The Washington Post background article also mentioned this, quote, neighbors in several states where he owned homes and retirement communities described him as surly, unfriendly, and standoffish. His mother struggled to raise him and his four brothers on her own. His father escaped from prison twice and had little more contact with them, relatives say. As they grew older, Stephen, the eldest, and the youngest brother, Eric, kept in touch, but Stephen Paddock drifted almost completely out of touch with his two other brothers, Bruce and Patrick. Eric and Stephen stopped talking to his brother Bruce because Bruce used to beat him up when they were kids, and that Stephen stopped talking to Patrick because they were very different people. End quote. Joel says, this telltale Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde split personality can be a sign of partial satanic possession. Nobody really has two different personalities innately, but when you live a life that becomes increasingly at variance with conscience, they begin listening to the promptings of Satan more and more until they can actually, without realizing it, become partially possessed and act in ways contrary to their innate self, almost always in some dark way. It comes and goes, giving rise to the label of bipolar. Don't be deceived by the traditional view of possession as someone running around like a crazy person. There are much more subtle forms of possession. Sadly, psychologists will never recognize either the influence of Satan in one's mind nor any innate spirit, so they are incapable of properly treating these conditions, except to give mood-altering drugs, SSRI, which make the symptoms temporarily go away on the medication, but doesn't solve the root behavioral problems. As I've written before in the briefs, I have had personal experience counseling with one or two youth who were rebellious. To help them understand what was happening to them, I would describe in some detail the workings of conscience in order to help them recognize the nervous feelings one gets when being warned about doing or thinking about something wrong or not quite right, as well as the positive promptings to do the right thing, especially when they don't feel like it. One young lady, after having received my refresher lesson on conscience, said she hated that voice and that it kept after her, wanting her to change. Her resistance to that still small voice in the mind increased because she didn't want to change. In all such cases, Satan feeds them rationalizations and reinforces the resistance. Finally, her parents sent her to counseling, where the psychologist put her on Prozac and other SSRI drugs, and she seemed to improve, at least in her attitude. She later told me that the reason she liked being on mood-altering drugs is that she, quote, could no longer hear that nagging voice of conscience, end quote. That indicated to me that the great danger of these drugs is that they affect the part of the brain that receives the promptings from conscience and leaves them open to greater satanic influence. That's why suicide is so often connected to SSRI drug use. The government, having access to all of Paddock's surveillance records, including medical, which all goes into a secret federal database, quickly found out that Paddock was prescribed Valium, diazepine, as a tranquilizer. While not the same as an SSRI, this drug has a similar history of altering moods with violent and aggressive behavioral side effects. The psychological side effects include, quote, restlessness, agitation, irritability, aggressiveness slash aggression, rage, delusions, nightmares, psychoses, hallucinations, and inappropriate behavior occurred in patients with paradoxical reactions, especially in elderly and pediatric patients, end quote. It's interesting that a supposed tranquilizer can cause agitation and aggressiveness in some while causing others to be more calm. What is particularly disturbing is the danger of psychosis, rage, delusions, and hallucinations. But these might also be the telltale signs of satanic intervention in the mind while under the influence of these drugs, as in SSRIs. Is there any evidence that Paddock may have suffered from satanic-induced hallucinations or bad dreams about horrible things? There may be. In her interview with the FBI, girlfriend Danley admitted at times, he would lie in bed just moaning and screaming, oh my God. It wasn't physical, but mental. Something was obviously tormenting him. Police say he shot at officers as they breached the door, but by the time they made it into the suite, Paddock had committed suicide. Whether he was suicided by the FBI, dead men tell no tales, or ended his own life, we will never know. It has been my experience that virtually 100% of suicides involve strong satanic influence, driving them relentlessly to feelings of helplessness and despair and often prompting them to use a gun to themselves as well as others before ending it all. Tragically, I had a younger brother commit suicide in his car, and another brother who went to pick up the car after the body had been removed said he felt the overwhelming presence of evil spirits and had to flee the vehicle and have it towed instead. Don't underestimate what I'm warning about here. Satan's influence is real, though professionals will rarely admit it. In like manner, I don't think mass shootings ever occur except under one of three conditions. Either they are unprincipled mercenaries hired by the deep state, terrorists radicalized by government agent provocateurs, or mind-controlled by any combination of drugs, hypnosis, or satanic influence. While no one will ever be able to prove satanic influence because it's in the dark spiritual realm, we shouldn't let that deter us from considering it as a driving force in mass murders because we cannot find a direct link to government black operations. As my readers know, I feel strongly, says Joel, that the ultimate head of this great secret combination of power is Satan. Why should he not use every influence with his intended targets to push them individually to do great acts of violence using guns, knowing that this will eventually lead to loss of people's rights to defend themselves? I initially felt that Paddock may have been set up as the fall guy, and that his room could have been invaded by black ops shooters, guns planted and the attack made from his room, leaving him as the only shooter. Planting guns after transferring the fingerprints of the victim to them is a common black ops trick for false flag operations. Another Marine veteran felt the same, saying, quote, "It's gotta be a setup," says former Marine. As a firearms expert, he also questioned the lack of flashes coming from the hotel windows where the shooter was supposedly firing from. Paddock was a Trump fan, end quote. The ease of falsifying blame is enhanced when the suspect is dead, because now there is no necessity of a trial and the police don't have to provide any legal evidence for the claims they are making to the media, whether the guns can actually be traced to Paddock or whether they had his prints on them. With manually loaded magazines, every shell casing is going to have a thumbprint on it, as each round is pushed into the magazine one by one with the downward force of the thumb. In addition, they will never collect all the bullets removed from the wounded and match them to the specific rifles in Paddock's room. That said, the fact that gun store owners have come forth with eyewitness testimony independent of police saying that they recognized Paddock confirms that Paddock bought some of these assault-style rifles, part of the small arsenal of 23 guns he had in his room. Analysis of the weapons. Two of the semi-automatic rifles shown in the pictures had bump stock modifications visible, which turned them into nearly automatic weapons. Here's a brief video on how it works. There's a link in the brief. Because it only works by the shooter pushing forward on some part of the forward handguard of the rifle, it is very inaccurate and can only be used at large area targets when shooting over 50 yards away. Thus, it was effective on a parking lot-sized venue with thousands of people crowded close together. But one of my main objections to the official story about bump stock weapons being responsible for the shooting was the audio recordings where I heard two or three long bursts of fire that far exceeded the normal 30-round high-capacity magazine AR-15 magazines. They sounded more like 60 to 70 rounds in a burst, not 30. I figured that if the shooter was using a bump stock, it still wouldn't replace the need to change magazines often, and the length of some of the volleys exceeded a normal high-capacity magazine. The rate of fire also sounded more to me like a belt-fed machine gun, like the M240B or M249 SAW squad automatic weapon, a military-only automatic weapon. But I soon found out that there are 60 and even 100-round magazines for the AR-15 and AK-47 series of semi-auto weapons, which could have explained the longer bursts of fire. Sure enough, one of the pictures taken from the hotel rooms shows a large pile of what look like 100-round magazines, as well as one attached to the rifle. The other rifle looks like it has a normal 20-round magazine, in a picture with a link in the brief. I listened again to all of the recordings of the attack looking for the distinctive sounds of a belt-fed machine gun versus a bump-stock-fired semi-auto. A true machine gun has a steady and non-changing rate of fire. For example, the M240B fires about 600 rounds per minute. Other variants have a selectable rate of fire that goes up as high as 900 rounds per minute. But you have to partially dismantle the weapon to change the rate. It can't be done on the fly. The bump stock modification can come close to the rate of 600 rounds per minute, but it is not constant like a dedicated machine gun. The rate of fire changes somewhat depending on how much forward pressure you put on the weapon and whether or not you have a front hand grip added to facilitate that forward pressure. One of the weapons pictured from the hotel room with a 100-round magazine did have the front hand grip. From my military training, most of the long bursts of fire sounded like they were running very steady, about 600 rounds per minute, though no burst expended more than 100 rounds. But there were two instances when I heard the firing rate slow down, which is the telltale sign of a bump stock being used, With a bump stock in operation to stop firing, you release forward pressure, and as you do, the rate slows down if you keep your trigger finger engaged. You can hear that only once in the various recordings. A true machine gun never does that. Its cyclical rate is constant until the trigger is released. There were several pauses in the shooting where the shooter could have changed 100-round clips or even changed rifles, which is necessary because constant automatic fire quickly heats up a barrel and it begins to lose accuracy. Normal machine guns are limited to a couple of minutes of constant fire until the barrel has to be quickly changed out with a gloved hand. Without military training, Paddock may or may not have known this. The anomalies with the story. Now that we have established that Paddock could have been part of the shooting, or even done all of the shooting, let's consider the anomalies to the official story. 1. Why bring 23 weapons into the room when you only need one or two bump stock rifles and related magazines to carry out a mass shooting? If he was the only shooter, why have so many other rifles when you can only use one at a time, and only two had bump stock, full auto modifications? I can imagine a couple of other guns for defense when they inevitably come for you, but 23? That's simply an encumbrance. This is a serious objection since it also indicates lack of rational thinking or even being under the influence of hypnosis. Also, according to the Daily Mail, Paddock bought a $600 Ruger rifle just hours before arriving in Las Vegas, but the $600 weapon was not found among his 23 weapon assortment in his room. It was a Ruger 30 bolt-action rifle with an 18-inch barrel purchased from Guns and Guitars in Mesquite, Nevada. Quote, gun shop worker Skipper Spies only said that Paddock was calm and normal when he bought the weapon at around 3 p.m. on September 28th. Skipper said Paddock was a regular visitor to the store and he had served him four times in total. Interestingly, this rifle has gone missing. Police can't find it after searching his car and homes where other guns were found in a large gun safe. End of the quote. Question 2. How did Paddock get all those weapons up to his room? The weapons and ammunition would weigh several hundred pounds and require multiple suitcases. One story fed to the media claims that Paddock took advantage of the 8-hour shift changes to walk a couple of suitcases up the elevators at a time, so he wouldn't be noticed. But that doesn't make sense, because the cameras are still running even when the shift changes, and how would he have a knowledge of these specific shift change timings? In fact, why don't the police show the public the video footage of how and when the 10 to 13 suitcases got up to the room? There are cameras on every hallway. Question 3. The suite was complimentary, but he was also occupying an adjoining room, which had a window broken out 9 windows away from the suite window used in the attack. The hotel would have had no reason to grant him another room after gifting him a suite. Question 4. He set up a camera on a room service cart outside the room to warn him when police were arriving, as well as one on the peephole. That takes a bit of electronic and computer expertise. It also indicates some advanced planning that is more typical of special ops than a civilian. He used this camera to shoot through the door as a security guard and hit him in the leg as he was investigating his room. Question 5. Related to number 3, why were there 2 windows broken out for the shooting from 2 different rooms if there was only one shooter? Police claim there was a hammer-like tool present to break the windows open, but they are double-paned windows and very strong. So why go to all the trouble to break out 2 when the suite view of the target is better? To produce nearly 600 total hits on people, he would have probably had to expend at least 800 rounds of ammunition. That would be a huge pile on the floor. Pictures of the few shell casings don't add up to anywhere near that number. Question 7. The police say there were indications that he was planning an escape. But there's no escape when you're on the 32nd floor and the hotel is in lockdown 10 minutes after you start shooting. Question 8. Why did police take over an hour to take lethal action against the shooter once the shooting had stopped? The official story is that once the shooting had stopped, it was a barricade situation, and it took them that long to get into place. Which of the 2 rooms did they breach, and how was this decided? Was the extra room used by other shooters to escape detection? Question 9. Why were almost all the exits blocked at the concert, trapping victims inside the high fenced-in parking lot venue. One witness described the situation as being caught like a rat in a maze, with numerous dead ends. Fox News reported on a survivor, Russell Bleck, who said, quote, "There were 10-foot walls blocking us in. We couldn't escape. It was just a massacre. We had nowhere to go," end quote. It was also disturbing to see how so many people didn't react at all to the shooting, just stood around drinking and talking until a shot came nearby. Some ran, but found they were trapped, and others were crouching in groups, which only made them more likely targets, since the shooter was too far away to target individuals. They were just spraying the area where people were most densely congregated. Question 10. ISIS claimed responsibility, saying Paddock had recently converted to Islam, but there's zero evidence in his background of any religious feelings at all, let alone for radicalized Islam. However, as I have documented, ISIS was a creation of U.S. and British intelligence, renaming half of the U.S.-sponsored Syrian rebel fighters as quote-unquote ISIS. And thus claiming responsibility might be another hint that this was a government black operation like every other mass shooting. Now, evidence of multiple shooters. Even though Paddock was somehow involved, there are several pieces of evidence that there were other shooters. 1. Multiple witnesses reported the presence of multiple shooters and shots coming from different directions. The most disturbing is a video where one of the security guards is shown pulling out a machine pistol and opening fire on the crowd. While the machine pistol is hard to make out, the drawing forward motion of the arm is not, and immediately you see a white series of flashes illuminate the people directly in front of him as the weapon fires. It happens very fast, and the cameraman's view is jostled away as it happens, but when slowed down, it's very clear. The shooting on the ground may have been what prompted that police report about the active shooter at Gate 7, which is part of the link in the brief. Item 2. The taxi driver video documents everything, as he drives around during the gunfire. I've documented at least 3 different videos of this taxi driver that have all been dispersed and that have all disappeared from YouTube, censored by Google. If the link above doesn't work, search for another version and you'll find it somewhere. There are a lot of copies out there. In the video, you hear very loud automatic fire near the taxi, and then muffled automatic fire some distance away. This can sometimes be explained as the residual echo, as some debunkers claim, but at some point in the video the muffled gunfire comes first, or without a corresponding near sound to cause the echo. 3. There were few shots fired at the entrance lobby of the Bellagio, and it was on lockdown. There is a video here. 4. The taxi driver also sees the flashing spark of the machine gun fire, but it is not coming from the 32nd floor. Here is a link to another video documenting this telltale sign of another shooter from the tower halfway up the Mandalay Bay Tower, and the flashing gunfire is generally coordinated with the sound, accounting for sound traveling slower than light. This documented gunfire from around the lower floors is the biggest proof of other shooters. I also found a video that someone had taken of the tower the day after, and we can see several dark panels instead of reflective glass in places around the tower. Note at the 10-second mark and the minute 30 mark that 2 of these dark panels are in the same lower mid-level area that automatic fire was seen coming from on the previous night. Were these openable windows or broken-out windows that had quickly been replaced? Notice that the 2 windows on the 32nd floor have not been replaced yet. Perhaps these darkened panels instead of windows indicated openable windows. 5. Recordings of police broadcasts clearly talk about another shooter on the 4th floor, but neither police nor mainstream media report any follow-up on the results of that claim. Debunkers ignorantly say that because the rifles have flash suppressors on them, that there would be no flash visible. That simply isn't true. Suppressors disperse some of the flash, but not all. It still makes a star-shaped bright light signature viewed from the receiving end that was clearly visible to people close to the Mandalay Bay Tower. So far, no videos show flashes from the 32nd floor, but that may have been too high up and too far away to be seen on cell phone cameras. Debunkers also claim that the flashing light from the weapons lower down in the building was a strobe light, but strobe lights are much brighter than what is seen. 5. An Australian man staying at the Mandalay Bay Resort next door to Paddock Suite told his hometown newspaper that there were multiple shooters. Quote, Australian Brian Hodge, who previously worked at Jupiter's Casino on the Gold Coast, claimed he was staying in the room next to the shooter on level 32 of the Las Vegas Resort. He said he'd managed to escape the initial horrific scenes inside the hotel but found himself forced to hide in a bush in the hallway for several hours after the event. I got outside my room safely and was hiding in bushes, Mr. Hodge said. There were multiple people dead and multiple shooters. I was just hiding, waiting for police to come get us. It was a machine gun from the room next to me, he said. My floor is a crime scene. They killed the security guard on my floor. Joel inserts, the security guard was actually only wounded, but Hodge's knowledge of the shooting of the guard corroborates his being on the 32nd floor, end quote. Foreknowledge of the attack. There surfaced an interview with a survivor telling about a Hispanic woman who was hassling a person ahead of her, saying, you're all going to die. This was 45 minutes before the performance began. The UK Express reported on it, saying, quote, one woman who was at the Route 91 music event claimed an unidentified woman had told other concertgoers they were, quote, all going to die, end quote, after pushing her way to the front of the venue. The witness, 21, told local news, she had been messing with a lady in front of her and telling her she was going to die, that we were all going to die. They escorted her out to make her stop messing around with other people, but none of us knew it was going to be serious. She described the lady as Hispanic. The lady was escorted from the venue along with the man. The unnamed witness who was attending the event on her 21st birthday described the pair as short, both around 5 foot 5 inches to 5 foot 6 inches tall, and looked like, quote, everyday people. End of the quote. The larger question, Joel says, is why haven't the police taken this lady into custody? Having removed her from the arena, they must have some idea of who she is. Channel 4 of Las Vegas was given a warning for people to stay away from mass gatherings in the Vegas area and about how another mass shooting may precipitate a new mandate for heavy security at all casinos. This, of course, would benefit certain insider security scanner industries like those owned by former Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff, who benefited financially from the shoe bomber false flag threat to airliners. He had the government spend millions on X-ray scanners at airports. He had a financial interest in that. This eventually had to be replaced because of health threats to those scanned. James Murren, CEO of MGM International, owner of the Mandalay Bay, sold off a large portion of his holdings in the weeks prior to the attack. This isn't proof, but something to keep in mind if other evidence surfaces implicating foreknowledge. The gun control agenda. Every mass murder creation by the deep state is another attempt to push more gun control, a telltale sign of the conspiracy in government we are dealing with. And this event is no exception. At the very least, two pieces of pro-gun legislation currently before Congress are now dead. The bill legalizing silencers has been tabled, but the more important one, a bill legalizing national concealed carry reciprocity, is also on the chopping block. Concealed carry reciprocity would go a long way towards allowing guns of responsible citizens to cross state borders as they travel. Presently, we have to leave protection at home if traveling cross-country. As to the gun control crowd, they are calling for a complete ban on the now legal bump stock modification, and supplies of these items as well as high-capacity magazines are flying out the door of gun stores around the country in anticipation of a new ban. I wouldn't be surprised to see another move to ban assault-style weapons or all semi-auto weapons, though there's still a lot of resistance to another such ban. President Trump, it turns out, is sometimes very susceptible to wrong-headed legislation when he faces a tragedy where there is a lot of media pressure to do something. As Breitbart.com complained, he's looking like he will be open to signing some type of additional gun restrictions. Quote, if Trump moved toward gun control, it would be the end of everything, warned Steve Bannon, worse than an immigration amnesty. Trump was uncompromising in his defense of the Second Amendment during the campaign and in an April 2017 speech to the National Rifle Association, but Sunday's massacre in Las Vegas has put a new spotlight on Democrats' efforts to pass new gun control laws. Trump told reporters Tuesday morning that we'll be talking about gun laws as time goes on, end of the quote. The Daily Mail said that Donald Trump's base would go ballistic if he were to show signs of compromising with Democrats on new gun control laws. And that's true. Quote, "The president offered an uncompromising, ironclad defense of the Second Amendment when he campaigned for the White House. But Sunday's massacre in Las Vegas appears to have softened his armor. He also promised he would, quote, never ever infringe on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Never ever," end quote. Steve Bannon, a former Trump chief strategist in the West Wing, told the Axios News website that the idea of Trump embracing gun control is, quote, impossible, end quote, to think, and would, quote, be the end of everything, end quote. Bannon also suggested that moving in a liberal direction on gun control would anger the president's core supporters even more than an amnesty for illegal immigrants. Quote, "As hard as it is to believe," quote, he said, quote, "actually worse," end quote. Asked about bipartisan legislation addressing gun suppressors, sometimes called silencers, Joel inserts, which were not involved and are already highly regulated, continuing the quote, "Trump didn't dismiss the idea out of hand. We'll talk about that later," he said. If Trump were to soften his defense of the Second Amendment, his base would go insane, and he knows it, said longtime confidant Roger Stone, end quote. Joel says that's a very interesting and honest opinion piece that there is a very interesting and honest opinion piece that came out this week in the Washington Post by Jahe Chikwendu, gun control advocate and a statistician, that has admitted that her statistics show that traditional gun control doesn't work. It's an amazing admission. Finally, some summary comments. Joel says, "While I have to admit that this mass murder involved both Stephen Paddock and some elements of the deep state, the other shooters, trying for more gun control, I cannot devise a solid working theory to link how the dark side mercenaries would have coordinated with Paddock's determination to commit murder, whether satanic or otherwise, if Paddock was not directly controlled by them. I can see how the deep state might have tracked Paddock's purchases and assault-style rifles and singled him out as a potential setup, especially given his gambling habits, and knowing that would put him in the right venue near the prospective massacre. But I don't see any way the deep state could have known when or if Paddock would ever show up with his arsenal in the Mandalay Bay without some coordination and foreknowledge of his intentions, unless there is a link somewhere between the deep state and Paddock's controlled mental state. So, while satanic influence can and has explained many high-profile gun crimes and suicides, it can only explain the role of Paddock alone, not along with the other shooters. One possibility that should be considered is whether or not Paddock was in some way subject to hypnosis, which can pre-program a person's actions. If Paddock, in his medical needs, because of his nightmares and troubled mental state, had also agreed to other therapies, like hypnosis, it is possible that a government-connected psychologist could have used hypnosis to program Paddock to do that act at the hotel and facilitated coordination with deep state bad actors. Don't dismiss this out of hand. Psychologists were heavily implicated in the government efforts to devise illegal torture strategies at Abu Ghraib. I don't have any evidence to back up this possibility except for the aforementioned contradictions in Stephen Paddock being the lone shooter. If other shooters were present, there had to be some link between them and Paddock. BlacklistedNews.com came up with another theory that tries to create a connection between Paddock and the deep state, but it doesn't hold water. They found out that one of Paddock's airplanes was sold in 2007 and ended up eventually in the hands of an obscure government military contractor, Volant LLC, in 2013. But they failed to tell you there were two other buyers in between, which tends to negate the possibility that Paddock was linked with Volant. In short, because this entire tragedy fits a similar pattern of other government-directed mass shootings, we might never know the whole story. With any conspiracy, we rarely do. Since the deep state can hide its secrets behind the wall of national security, the full truth will always be hidden from the public, if they can help it. But as in past conspiracies, things leak out and new whistleblowers emerge as time goes by. When they do, I'll keep readers posted.